Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Nashville Predators. A big weekend for them, back-to-back wins against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And to help us talk more about that, we welcome in our good friend Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also handles the Predators' pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Darren, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Good morning, Robbie. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, and so are the Nashville Predators as of late. Winners of four out of their last five games. What stood out to you for them over this stretch, specifically over the weekend, and two big wins against the Blue Jackets?
Well, what stood out is they like playing Columbus. It feels like the good old days.
Yes, they do.
They have owned the Blue Jackets, really, in their franchise's history. I mean, that's what's amazing, and I guess luckily for the Blue Jackets, there's nobody on this roster that can remember when the Predators really used to own them. I think at one point won like 15, 16 in a row. They had won like 18 of 20. I mean, it was just disgusting how bad they beat up on the Blue Jackets. Well, they're doing it again this year, which they desperately need to do. I mean, right, they need to find more teams like the Blue Jackets that they could beat up on. They're now 5-1 against them this season. I think the bad news is they only have two more games against them. It's not until May, so that's like the sad news. What was going well as well? Let's start with special teams. How many Mondays did I come on here and us talk about special teams, and really there was nothing being good said, right? Nothing good was being said about special teams, whether it was the penalty kill or the power play. Well, that's all changed. The power play's been humming. They've now got 13 power play goals. They've got a power play goal in five of their last six games, or they've got five power plays in their last six games. And, you know, Ellie Tolvanen is starting to kick in gear. The penalty kill has been effective. They haven't given up a power play goal in eight games. They've killed off 19 straight penalties. And they're doing a good job of staying out of the box as well. They're not in the box nearly as much as they were earlier in the year, maybe, and that helped contribute to giving up a lot of power play goals. So all that is working. It looks like John Hines has found some combinations. Also, they're working. How many Mondays have we sat here and talked about, you know, the combinations that just change every game, you know, every day, every minute, every shift? And it looks like from now things have settled in a bit. And the other thing is, you know, how many times did we sit here and talk about this on Mondays? Going to the net, having a net front presence, hanging around the net. Other teams are doing it. Why can't they? And they've been doing that. There have been a lot of bodies in front in this winning streak where they've taken four of five. And, you know, hopefully they'll continue to do all the above, and hopefully this trend will continue with more wins.
Yeah, Darren, you know, you bring up Columbus. Does this mean – have the Preds won the Johansson – Seth Jones trade again? Like, is that now a Preds win? Because, you know, like, whenever they lose, you know, you hear that from fans. But, you know, but I one thing about this weekend that we just talked about, Darren, that was surprising to us, was just that Saros gets both starts. What do you make of that?
I was a little bit surprised, Joe, to be honest. Yes, a little bit surprised, because naturally in a back-to-back situation, you expect, especially – when you're playing goalies, like you have the goalie situation that the Predators have, right? A 1 and a 1A, and whoever's hot is going to be the starter. Yeah, you expect that. But John Hines, I'll give it to him. He remains consistent in his message. He remains consistent in, you know, how he approaches things. And as long as you're getting the job done, I mean, listen to his postgame yesterday. Why, some people have probably wondered, why Eric Halla, right? Like, at what point, you know, why aren't you sitting him down? He's not producing. Well, John Hines feels just the opposite. He feels that, you know, the fourth line has been playing exactly the way he wants them to play, and they're getting rewarded for that. And he basically was giving them the ringing endorsement. Like, that's why they're out there, because they are playing the way we want them to play. And maybe he just – well, UC Saros, I guess when you look at the numbers, it makes sense, Joe. He's had a lot of success against the Blue Jackets. So I guess we shouldn't be that surprised. This year he's 4-1 against them. He's got a .955 save percentage. That's pretty good. That would be nice if that was, you know, a save percentage all season long. I think the Predators would be in a lot better position than they are in the standings. But I think that's probably a little unrealistic. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise. And then on the other side, you can see John Tortorella. You can see where they've lost five in a row. They've lost 7 of 8 because they've had a couple overtime losses in there. They're going the wrong direction, and you can feel the walls are closing in on Columbus, right? They're going the wrong direction, and he's like, with Merzlikins, you know, if they have Merzlikins and Corposalo, then they've got kind of the same situation as the Predators. Two goalies they feel very, very comfortable with starting, you know, in any situation. Well, with Merzlikins out, you know, he's looking around going, yeah, I'm not going with the backup. So, Corposalo, get back out there. We need wins. And it didn't surprise me that he was back in between the pipes. But you're right. Saros back out there did surprise me a bit. I just think we all expected Pekka to be back in net.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also with the Preds pre- and post-game duties on the Nashville Predators Radio Network. On with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Darren, you brought up earlier Eli Tolvanen and the chemistry right now that he's found, especially with Forsberg on the power play. And I don't know about you, but I feel like it's translated to his game as a whole. He looks like a very confident player out there right now. Looks like a player that's been effective in all three zones. And I think at this point, it's safe to say, at least in my opinion, he's a full-time NHL guy at this point. What have you seen from Eli Tolvanen over the last little stretch here?
I agree with you 100%, Robbie. And it was brought up yesterday in postgame, as you guys know. And if you notice, John Hines, in fact, it was a good question of just talking about Tolvanen's complete game, because that's what we've talked about, right? Nobody's questioned whether he has a shot, whether he can score, power play, you know, what he does offensively. Nobody's ever questioned, but everybody knew what he brought to the table. But it's the 200-foot game, right? It's the two-way game. It's like, what can he do on the other end? Is he a liability? And as we know, unless you're a rock star in the offensive zone, you know, that was a long time. That was the knock on Ovechkin, right, until Barry Trotz got there, and Barry Trotz turned him into a two-way player. But nobody cared, because when you score 50 goals a season, people tend to look the other way. They tend to forget about, you know, if Kyrie Irving scores 35 a game, people tend to forget that he can't, you know, he couldn't guard a barn. And so, but Tolvanen right now isn't there, right? Hopefully he turns into that. But it is amazing how he's really worked on the other part of his game, and it's showing and it's shining. And John Hines talked about that yesterday. And if you watch this team and you watch him, you could see it. I mean, the guy is all over the place. He's not just sitting there in the left circle, which I love, by the way. I've been clamoring for somebody, for the Predators to have a guy like Stamkos and Ovechkin and, you know, other guys that are extremely predictable in this league, and they have their spot, and everybody knows they're going to be in their spot, and nobody can stop them in their spot. And I like that Tolvanen has found his spot, and that spot is working. And Forsberg, you know, I like, by the way, the way they're playing the power play right now, right? I like what's going on. They got Granlund down low. You know, they got some high-low action going on, right? You got some passing up at the point. Down to Granlund, down low. Everybody shifts. What you're doing, and Hal Gill was describing this yesterday perfectly on the postgame show. He's a guy that's logged a lot of penalty kill minutes. He's like, you know, the best penalty kill in the world is predictability. If you know what the other team is going to do, and if you know, you know, if they're stagnant and they kind of just do the same thing over, and he's like, you become the best penalty kill in the unit, in the world, in the league. He goes, but what you hate as a penalty kill is when they're constantly changing things around, when they're constantly doing things differently. And the Predators currently are keeping penalty kill units on their heels. They're moving the puck around. They're going high, low, and I like it. And what are you going to do, right? I mean, okay, so fine. You once you say Forsberg over on the right side, he's going to pass to Tolvanen, so we're going to collapse over on Tolvanen. Well, fine, collapse. Leave Forsberg alone. What do you think he's going to start doing on the power play? He's going to start ripping it, right? And so he's going to start scoring. So it's I really like the look on the power play, and I would love for Tolvanen just to keep staying in that spot, and it keeps working, because I've been dying for the Predators to have a guy that just stands in the spot and rips one in the back of the net. So hopefully that continues.
Yeah, it's been a while since it's been enjoyable to watch them on the power play, but that's what it's become now. So got to point to that
Anyway. So it's nice, Joe, to see when they go on the power play, people on Twitter are going, no, decline the power play. Just decline the penalty, right? We've seen all that over the last couple of years.
And pretty soon, Vingan has to retire the Simpsons gif. You know, he has to retire it. I'm sorry. Like, if they're middle of the league, he says, what did he say? He's going to wait until they're in the top 10.
He said top 10.
It's a little bit. Yeah, that's, you know, I think he should retire it earlier. But anyway, Vingan, by the way, massive Duke fan, of course. Now, Darren, you were born and raised in Lexington. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, then you're going to agree with me then on this, which we've been discussing on the show today. March Madness, best sporting event in this country, right?
Come on, man. I grew up in Lexington. Of course, March. You got to love the tourney, man. It's going to be a little bit different this year, but you got to love the tournament. Although I won't love it as much if Kentucky's not in it, which they're probably not going to be. But anyway, I digress.
Well, they could make a run here.
I'll tell you what, if Tennessee doesn't get their stuff together, they might not be in the tournament.
They're
a tough watch right now. They really are.
If teams were judged on like just how they're playing like in the last month, I don't think they'd be in.
I don't think they would either. They need to get their stuff together. They look like a team. You're talking about a team lost on offense. That team is lost. That team is way too talented to look like that. Way too talented. I'm not buying that they're overrated. Some people are like, maybe they were just overrated. You know, people were hyping them up. I don't believe that. I've watched this team all season, and I don't believe they're overrated. I don't believe it was too much hype early on. I believe they are a very talented basketball team, and they are underachieving. That's just my two cents.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties on the Nashville Predators Radio Network, has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Darren, appreciate it as always, my friend, and have a great show starting at 10 o'clock today. We'll be listening.
Thank you, Robbie. Joe, bring it home strong.
Absolutely. We will do our best. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Nashville Predators and revisit our poll question of the day. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yossi, right side, Forsberg. Here's Tolvanen, the shot, and the Predators score. Tolvanen enables the Predators to tally on the power play and take a 2-1 lead.
Ellie, just how much confidence are you finding right now in your individual game? Also, kind of just talk about your line mates and how that line is doing right now. It seems like you guys are finding confidence with each other.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's easier to play game by game and playing with those two, Granny and Philip. You know, when you give it the puck to them, you're going to get it back. And, you know, they're really elite players in this league, so it's a lot of fun playing with those guys. And I just have to do my best and build the confidence and just to try to help those guys.
Another goal yesterday for Ellie Tolvanen, who continues to play very well for the Nashville Predators as of late, and a big back-to-back set for the Predators over the weekend, two wins against Columbus. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, remember, when the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick the Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a prize pack, and the next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45, so make sure that you're tuned in for that as the Predators get set to take on the Carolina Hurricanes. And a guy playing very well right now, Joe Rexrode, for the Predators has been Ellie Tolvanen. We've talked about the top power play unit that Darren McFarland brought up in the last segment with him and Philip Forsberg and the chemistry that they found. John Hines going with a different look 5-on-5 over the weekend as well, putting Tolvanen with Mikael Granlund and Philip Forsberg on the top line. And Tolvanen, to me, just seems like a player right now that is very confident. We know about the skills he possesses offensively, but really all over the ice right now for Tolvanen, things are going well. It seems like he's coming into his own, and to the point where if I'm the Predators and I'm evaluating this, I think I'm comfortable at this point, especially given the season, the way it's gone, and the lack of scoring that they've had. I'm comfortable saying that Ellie Tolvanen right now is a full-time NHL player.
Well, I agree, and I think that the Tolvanen storyline, I mean, right now if the Preds, you know, were 11-10-0, they'd won 4-5, they're still pretty significantly out of the playoff picture. If that were happening and, you know, Arvidsson was scoring a couple more goals, Deschene, whatever, it would be, to me, this is makes it more interesting and maybe exciting for Predators fans that you actually have a young player in your system, you know, a prominent draft pick who had a lot of hype, who is actually developing and getting better and becoming a player. That makes this little mini run here, to me, better for the Preds and Preds fans because you have something to look forward to down the line maybe with him.
I would agree, and it's been interesting to follow his journey because I think a lot of people heading into this season, especially when he didn't make the team like right out of camp, started to discount him and said, all right, like when's Eli Tolvanen going to figure this out? Like at what point does he become a bust? And you've said it all along, like people develop at different rates and people, I mean, he's 21 years old. It's not like you're talking about a guy here that's just been, you know, hanging around for so long, even though it feels like he's been here forever, he really hasn't been in the grand scheme of things. Now, I'm not saying that Eli Tolvanen has figured everything out and that all of a sudden he's going to be this prolific 25-goal scorer for the Predators. I still think there's work to do. I still think that there are some areas of his game that you're going to need to improve. But this is the first stretch, if I'm the Predators, where I feel really good about his future. Again, not saying that he's going to be an all-star forward or anything like that, but there's been pretty significant progress from my vantage point this year. Just watching him play in the time that he's been in the lineup, I think he's improved pretty dramatically up until this point. And I think a lot of that is just the comfort of knowing that, hey, if you screw up one time, it doesn't mean that you're just going to be, you know, sitting back to the American Hockey League for the next 3 months. You've got some room to grow. You've got some room to make mistakes. I think when you can free a younger player up that way and he's not just looking over his shoulder all the time, that can be very beneficial. And I think we're seeing some of that right now with Tolvanen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's huge. The kind of just assurance that you're going to be in this lineup and you're going to be able to play through some mistakes. I think it's a tough balance for coaches in any sport, especially with young players, you know, college and pro, the impulse to, you know, to remove a player. And sometimes it's punitive. Sometimes it's just because like, you can't deal with the mistakes. You gotta have someone else in there. But then what does that do to a young player? How does that affect confidence and how does it affect how they play? And it seems like we've seen it all the time across sports that when someone gets an opportunity to play through stuff, then they just start playing better. So, I mean, with Tolvanen, I was definitely fooled some by Tolvanen in the Olympics on the big ice, but I mean, you could tell like this guy could help your power play right now.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And I think that's always been the case. And it's sort of like, can you get to the point where you do everything else well enough to earn a spot in the lineup so you can? And I think that's one thing moving forward. I mean, I think he's going to be a pretty consistent weapon in that way. Now, like you said, is he going to be like a 20-goal consistent guy? I mean, it's way too early to forecast that. But on the power play, you can see it. He has a feel.
He's got a feel and
wicked shot.
Yeah, a wicked shot. And right now, some great chemistry with Forsberg as well. And it just gives you options. Like, to Darren's point in the last segment, like if Philip Forsberg is controlling a lot of this right now. And if you look at the goal in Detroit that Tolvanen had, you look at the goal yesterday, I mean, teams right now are just collapsing on Forsberg. And he's able to, you know, have poise with the puck and deliver it across the ice. And Tolvanen is executing really well on the shot right now. Teams, if that continues to happen, are going to adjust, and they're going to try to take Tolvanen's shot away. And if they do that, you're going to free up Philip Forsberg. So I think there are options right now that the Predators have. The puck movement is creating some of those options. You've got, you know, defenders on the penalty kill moving around more often now than being able to just set up and wait on you. I think Terry Crisp nailed it when he was on with us Friday. Too much early in the season on the power play was forwards just standing around and kind of going up and down the half wall trying to make something happen that way. They're a lot better shape right now in terms of the puck movement that they've had. And the story with Tolvanen has never been, you know, his ability to produce offensively. It's always been, what does he look like away from the puck? And that's perhaps the area where I think I've been most impressed with him so far, is he's taken some pretty big strides that way. And John Hines talked about that yesterday after the game and the improvement that Tolvanen has made in that area. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
You know, when he came in, everyone was, it's going to be offense, offense, offense. But for a young player to come into the league, you know, the reason why he got in the lineup originally was because of his play without the puck and his competitiveness. You know, then he gets in and he starts to find his way, but he continues to find his way and continues to get opportunities to play because he's responsible without the puck. You know, he knows how to play. He knows where to be. You know, we've talked with him about the competitive level you need to be at here in the NHL to be able to play. He's done that. He's been physical. He's been good on his puck battles. Now he gets game, another game, gets more ice time, gets more opportunity, and now you're starting to see a young player grow, and that's how you grow a young player, is you give them, you know, they get opportunities, they earn more. But to his credit, he's done the work, and he's the guy that has given us reasons to play him in the situations that he's earning to play in. And that's a good thing on Tolvi. And now we've, you know, gave him a little bit more ice time, a game, a different role, 5-on-5, a little bit different look on the power play, and he continues to make progress. So that's a good thing for him and for us.
So that was Predators head coach John Hines after the game yesterday for the Predators. And Joe, obviously very complimentary of Elie Tolvanen there. With that in mind, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. Which of the following Preds prospects or youngsters has you most excited for the future? And the options are Elie Tolvanen, Philip Tomasino, Yaroslav Askarov, or other. 200 votes are in, 52% going with Elie Tolvanen, 29% say Philip Tomasino, 16% going with Askarov, and 3% say other. Joe, are you surprised that Elie Tolvanen is leading the way with 52% of the vote?
By that much, yes, I am surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if he won a close vote. I think, like Poor said earlier on the show, a couple weeks ago, I think Tomasino wins in a runaway.
Yeah.
So, I can't prove it, but I feel pretty strongly about that. I mean, Tomasino is the guy we've been talking about, like, you know, very young, still early, but tons of upside.
Another goal for him yesterday, by the way.
And Tolvanen has, you know, Tolvanen at age 20 was like, oh boy, what's going to happen with this guy? Washed up, which again, so he's obviously done a lot here in a short period of time to remind people, one, that he's good, that he can play, that he has upside. And it's always worth mentioning that he's 21.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Tolvanen stays in the lineup all year long for the betterment of the team, and Ekholm will be here to stay. And another pretty important piece over the weekend, the Predators got back in their lineup. Mattias Ekholm, 2 goals on Saturday against Columbus, his first multi-goal game of his career. And not only what he was able to do offensively in that game, but defensively. I mean, he is just such a calming force with his presence out there. It was good to see him back in the lineup, and I think pretty apparent early on how important he is to that group.
Just increases his trade value.
I did see some of that on Twitter over the weekend too.
Yeah, I mean, Ekholm is going to be, as we get closer to that stuff, that's going to be really, really interesting. He's a heck of a player. I mean, I've always thought Ekholm was underrated. Of course you're going to be underrated if you're him in this defense core.
Yeah.
You know, but does a lot for this team, means a lot to this team. So that could be one of those real painful decisions ahead for David Poile.
Coming up next, we will revisit a discussion on the Tennessee Vols basketball team. It was another tough loss for Rick Barnes and company over the weekend against Auburn. What does it mean for them moving forward over here in the next couple of weeks as tournament time approaches? And are they too far gone at this point to figure it out and get things going back again in the right direction before tournament time comes? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue the tradition with a hockey home-gating party, and it's time to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate. You can watch a Predators-Preds weekend game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Just text the word GAME to 615-737-1025. That's the word GAME to 615-737-1025. Now to enter. The winner will be contacted on Thursday, and you must be 21 or older to enter the competition.
You know what that prize pack includes?
What's that?
Free beer!
Yeah, buddy. All righty. There you go. Ryan Porth, very excited about the free beer here on the program. Make sure you hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615 737-1025. Joe Rexrode, it was another very poor showing for the Tennessee Volunteers over the weekend. A loss to Auburn and a shorthanded Auburn team at that over the weekend. Turnovers galore in the first half, and they could just never get anything going outside of the two freshmen offensively. And right now, it just feels like this team is in a world of hurt with no end in sight.
Yeah, look, it's bad. It was a bad week, and they are kind of a lost team right now, which is just weird to see. It's just weird to see a Rick Barnes team go backward in a season. It does not happen normally. I mean, you talk about his NCAA tournament success, and that's fine, and that's fair game. And one Final Four with all the good teams he's had and all the great players he's had, I mean, that's a fair criticism. Rick Barnes almost – like, I mean, I don't know about every single year, but I would say very consistently his teams get better and are ready to go for a tournament. And I'm kind of half in agreement with DMAC last segment. I do think this team was a little overrated, by me included, and others. When I saw them early, I was like, okay, that looks like a Final Four team. You know, this looks like a super deep, athletic, crazy, aggressive defense, running and gunning. Like, I thought they looked special and loaded. And I do think that was overstated, okay? Like, they're very talented. I mean, when you have two first-round picks, I made this point in my column Saturday. I mean, Rick Barnes has only had this twice in his career. If they both get picked in the first round, Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, this will be the third time ever in his career. For all the talent he's had, they would have multiple first-round picks off a team. You know, that happened twice for him at Texas. So from that perspective, yes, talented. But I do think that some of what I saw early was I was a little bit overreacting to some of it, and I think a lot of us were. And somewhere in the middle is where this team should be. This should be a Sweet 16 caliber team with a chance to who knows from there. And right now I have my doubts that it'll get there.
I do too, and it's weird to watch because it just feels like there is a disconnect right now between Rick Barnes and the players. And some of the same issues we've been talking about for weeks continue to be there with this group, and that is the lack of aggression, how they're not getting to the free throw line as much as I think we feel like they should. I mean, Eve Pons is a guy that ought to be there more. We've documented the struggles that John Fulkerson has had up until this point. This just seems like a team. And you hear Rick Barnes in some of his post-game press conferences talking about the effort not being there or the passion, the intensity not being at the place that it needs to be. That's fine. Like, I have no problem with a coach saying that. I think we need more of that, to be honest, and more honesty in some of these situations. But that's also on the coach. Like, Rick Barnes, I don't think is doing a very good job right now with this team. And we talked about it a little bit last week. There's a segment of the Tennessee fan base that is all over Rick Barnes right now. And quite frankly, there's a segment that's been over him from the start saying, you know, he's washed up. He's not a guy that's going to win at a high level at Tennessee and can't get it done in tournament time when it matters the most. And I made my feelings on that clear. I think you need to have perspective. I think you need to realize what this Tennessee basketball program has been and what it is. And I think with that in mind, Rick Barnes has done an outstanding job. But that can be true at the same time of saying that I think with this group, there's a lot that's been left to be desired with Rick Barnes. And I don't think it's going very well right now. This does not look like to me a well-coached basketball team at the moment.
No, it's easily the worst job he's done at Tennessee. And again, this is a very weird year for him. This is not the norm for Rick Barnes. And I know that Rick Barnes and any coach, and understandably, will say, well, guess what? I talked to my players on Zoom, okay? Just about everybody in this program has been affected by COVID-19 going back to the fall. So, yeah, I'm doing my worst job. What do you expect? And I understand that, and I think that's fair to point out. It's also fair to point out that everybody else has these issues, and some teams have – managed to get through it. And if you're going to go ahead with sports and all this, which I'm glad we did, then you're going to go ahead with coach evaluations too. And it's just been very strange to see this all happen. Now, I want to ask you, Robbie, something you just said. You said some people have been consistently like down on Barnes. You're telling me there were Vols fans in 18 and 19 who were still saying Rick Barnes got to go?
I am telling you there are Vols fans that from the moment he was hired says that Tennessee will never make a deep tournament run with him.
Yeah.
And I think people are saying
that may be true.
Well, it could be true, but I think people, even with that team, view the tournament as, and rightly so, as a huge disappointment in the way that season ended. But what I'm saying is that can be true, and that's fair criticism. But also, like, you're in conversations right now as a basketball program that you just haven't been in with some of the recruits that you're bringing in. I mean, Kennedy Chandler coming in next year, he's the number one point guard in America. I mean, Tennessee just doesn't get those type of guys. And you've got to keep that part of it in mind as well when you're having a discussion about Rick Barnes.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, any idea of Rick Barnes' hot seat is stupid. It just get away from that. You know, come on. Look, I knew that things – I did know the tone would probably change after the UCLA thing, because then he goes to $5 million a year basically. He's making $4.9 this year, but he's about to be over $5 million. You know, it's basically a $5 million a year deal that he got off the UCLA pursuit. And I knew then, it's like, okay, now you're talking about top-tier money in the sport. And so I think, especially this is coming off, like you said, Robbie, I mean, hey, the NCAA tournament, this is part of why I think it's the greatest event, because things like that Purdue-Tennessee game happened, and that was one of the craziest games I've ever seen. And, man, I don't know if Lamonte Turner fouled him or not, but Purdue was just Ryan Klein's hitting every three from every, you know, crazy game. They lose, they're out, it happens in the tournament. But that team was a team that could have won it all. That team was a team that certainly could have been to the program's first Final Four. I thought it was destined for that. Didn't happen. So then you go back to the Rick Barnes tournament stuff, and that's fair. And then you have UCLA, and you have all this money he's making. So I knew the tone would be different. But again, I never would have guessed that this team with the talent it has, which I still think is pretty darn good, could go backward like this. And that's where I just can't figure it out. It's a very weird situation with Rick Barnes, and he's got this week, and it's a big week for him, because ultimately Fulkerson's a mystery and Pons isn't aggressive enough, and you know, we're too much around the freshmen and the rotation. Okay, well, you're the coach, figure it out.
Well, and the other part of the discussion is from the game specifically this weekend, is the fact that Bruce Pearl was the one to beat him, and Auburn's beaten Tennessee six times in a row. Bruce Pearl has had a great amount of success against Tennessee and Rick Barnes, and that certainly did not ease the pain for Tennessee fans this weekend in the loss to Auburn. Like you said, a shorthanded Auburn team at that.
Yeah, I saw a stat, and this is another I so often on this show fail to credit the proper tweeter, so I'm sorry. That's my big blanket disclaimer. Sue me, you know, I'm sorry. But it was a great stat. I think it's six straight, and this actually goes back to Pearl at Tennessee, Barnes at Texas, six straight times in which Barnes' team was higher ranked that Pearl's team won.
Yeah.
And listen, don't let anyone tell you this was not a terrible loss. Auburn is bad this year. Auburn has been bad with Sharif Cooper, who is a first-round pick, who's a 20.8 assist guy, who is absolute magic, a joy to watch, a wizard, okay? And they're still not good. And you take him out of the lineup, there is absolutely no excuse to lose to that team. They've got some talented guys. But that was just a miserable, like, effort, enthusiasm. This team looks like it has no fun at all playing the game, no chemistry at all, no one's talking. Barnes is over there yelling at guys through his mask, and, like, it doesn't feel like they're listening. I mean, they've got issues they got to deal with. It would be a massive disappointment if this team – can at least do some kind of damage in the SEC and NCAA tournaments.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dan texts in and says, isn't this the same issue that Texas was having before they had to fire Rick Barnes? I don't know that it was quite like this. Like, to your point, Joe, they've typically had teams under Rick Barnes that have gotten better as the season's gone along. I mean, the tournament is one thing, and it's certainly a fair criticism of Barnes. It has not gone as well as it should have based on the talent that Barnes has had in his career. But it very rarely, if ever, has gone like this, where it just feels like this team is progressively getting worse as the season goes along.
Right. I mean, Barnes, certainly. He had some teams that were loaded. The Durant team, lost in the second round. But he had other guys like Corey Joseph and LaMarcus Aldridge, and he had great teams, 30-win teams. A couple of them go to the Elite Eight. I mean, look, I can tell you with my own two eyes, I've seen Rick Barnes win an Elite Eight game to get to the Final Four, his only game that he's won. They beat Michigan State in 2003 in San Antonio with T.J. Ford. That team could have won it all, but they got to the Final Four. You know, since then, obviously, a couple Elite Eights. What happened late in Texas, he did have two not great teams. So his 13 team was a losing team. They'd lost so much from the year before. And then his last team went 20-14. They lost in the first round. They were 8-10 in the Big 12. So the trend wasn't great. Although his next to last team was pretty good, won 24 games, got to the second round. The trend wasn't great. But and look, admittedly, not game by game following his teams, I don't think he had a lot of teams that were like somewhere here high in like December, and then by late February, March, they had declined. And that's not the pattern for him. And then this is a guy who's won more than 700 games. Okay. This is a terrific coach whose tournament success is a totally fair criticism. This is not the norm for him.
It's not, and we'll see if Tennessee can figure it out over the next couple of weeks here as they get into conference tournament play and then in the NCAA tournament as well. Certainly not going to be as high of a seed, we think, as we thought maybe to begin this season for the Tennessee Vols basketball program. And speaking of the tournament, it is now finally March. March 1st is here today. So with that in mind, let's talk about a little March Madness. Where does that event rank for you in terms of the best sporting events of the year? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll talk about it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join 102.5 The Game this Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live. Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And we've gone virtual this year, so that means you can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tune in this Wednesday for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Florida Panthers at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday night. So we'll have that opportunity for you coming up on Smashville Live on Wednesday. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day, taking you through this Monday morning. And Joe, talking about March Madness. Today being March 1st, March Madness is almost upon us. The conference championships getting underway here shortly. And then the NCAA tournament will be here before you know it. So when you factor in this time of year and the sporting event that is the NCAA tournament, where does that rank for you in terms of the best sporting events of the year?
Yeah, it's my number one. And, I thought about this a little bit too. I can't think of anything that's given me more like amazing moments over the years going back to childhood than this tournament. And I go back to the first time I was allowed to stay up. I've talked about it many times before, NC State. Shocking, that Houston team. I mean, I love that Houston team. I was actually heartbroken, but
yeah,
it was like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, Villanova shocking Georgetown in the 85 game. Princeton, Pete Carroll against 16 seed against Morning Mutombo Georgetown, one shot away from shocking them. So many over the years. And then I'm a little biased by being able to see a lot of stuff in person. I've just seen so many shots that have gone in games. That it's like, how is that possible? How did that guy make that shot in that moment? And Middle Tennessee beating Michigan State 5 years ago. I mean, Virginia, Butler and Michigan State in the Final Four in Indy, that Butler run where they almost hit a half court shot. I think it was Gordon Hayward to beat Duke. I mean, just so many games where it's like, it's just, it really is like magic. Like some of these late game buzzer beaters and plays that are made. And then, of course, like Corey Curtis said later, just the Cinderellas, the UMBCs, the George Masons, the VCUs, Butler now is kind of a power, but that was an incredible run for them. There's always a team or two that will kind of capture the country. Bryce Drew and Valparaiso, both a buzzer beater, one of the best ever, and a Cinderella. You know, you get those combined sometimes. So it's number one for me. The whole country gets into it. We all fill out a bracket, and the games, it's just wall-to-wall games and drama.
I certainly remember the UMBC-Virginia game, for sure. I got attacked by UMBC Twitter that night.
Really?
Yeah, really innocently. Like my tweet while the game was going on was, Preds and Avs are on one TV, Virginia and whoever UMBC is on the other one. Solid sports night. I didn't mean any disrespect to UMBC, but they won that game. I got retweeted, I think, by the UMBC account, and I just got mauled on Twitter by the UMBC people. You don't know who we are. You know who we are now. I was like, look, I didn't mean any disrespect by it. Who knew that UMBC Twitter was so violent?
Wow. So UMBC had the time that night in the greatest night in school history to search itself and find some of the people, some of the detractors out there. Man, because I remember that account was very – very good, right? That accounts.
Like I'm going through some of the replies right now to that tweet, and some dude on Twitter was like, "Wow, you got taken to school." I was like, "Okay, cool." Again, I'm happy for UMBC.
I can't believe that there actually is a quote unquote UMBC Twitter, but there we go.
Apparently, so.
They found you.
They're really upset at old Robbie Stanley that night. Look, I mean, I love the NCAA tournament. I'm not a gigantic college basketball fan. Like I like watching it, especially, you know, teams here locally. I'll turn it on and I'll watch it if they're on. But it's really not until the tournament where I get actually excited to watch college basketball. I'm more of an NBA guy. But the tournament, like, and I agree with what Porth said earlier in the show, like the opening weekend of the tournament, I think is just so awesome because – it's so unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's in a normal year with fans involved. Like this year, I think, could be even crazier just based on all the different factors that go into putting together an NCAA tournament this year. Like that part of it is so great. The unpredictability of it, the drama of it. I think it's great. So while I'm not a gigantic college basketball fan, it's somewhere in the top five to me in terms of the sporting events that happened throughout the year here in our country. Like, you know, I have a soft spot to the Stanley Cup playoffs. I have a soft spot for the NFL playoffs. I love the NBA playoffs too, just kind of in a different way. It's mainly just chalk in the NBA, and I like seeing the best two teams go up against each other in the finals. But the NCAA tournament, the opening weekend, pretty awesome.
One thing that kind of dawned on me over the weekend, Friday night kind of went down a rabbit hole on YouTube. And one of the recommended videos was every buzzer beater for March Madness in like the decade of the 2010s. So I clicked on it, and the thing that dawned on me watching that was we're really going to miss the crowds.
Oh yeah,
at March Madness this year. And it
yes,
you know, like I knew ahead of time that we weren't going to get fans at this tournament, but watching those buzzer beaters and those thrilling endings, and whether it's the crowds that are there for that team or just rooting on an underdog, not having those bursts of emotion from a crowd in those big moments, we're certainly going to miss that in this March Madness.
Oh, for sure. And Joe, to your point, like you talked about this earlier, when you're in the building for some of these games and the underdog is hanging around, like the longer they hang around, the more the building turns against the favorite. And having to deal with that if you're one of the higher-seeded teams, I think it's part of this. I think it's part of why you start to feel that pressure a little bit and maybe you become a little tight. Probably not going to have that same feeling this year in this tournament.
No, no doubt. Like, again, 5 years ago, Michigan State in St. Louis, you know, because obviously you got, like, Syracuse's fans are there, so they're going to root against the higher seed. But if, like, when it started to become clear, like, dude, middle is not going away, and they're winning, you know, the whole place, it was overwhelming. And I've seen it. Sometimes you get the teams that like the higher seeds, like Duke and Carolina always get to play in Raleigh or like, you know, Michigan State's national championship year, they played at the Palace of Auburn Hills and they were getting crushed by Syracuse and losing Iowa State. And then that building flipped because they had so many of their own fans. And it was like, I was told it was louder than any Pistons playoff game ever in that building. Like it was just ear splitting. So you get that sometimes too, but especially early, it seems like a lot of times you have just the, whenever there's a brewing upset, the crowd is a huge factor. And so, yeah, that's something we'll miss. There'll be some fan involvement, but not a ton.
Let's go to Twitter and get your reaction. Smashville Still on Twitter says that this is the best and purest sporting event left in the country is March Madness. I think Joe Rexrow would probably agree with that. EJ on Twitter says March Madness is number one. He would list the first weekend of college football number two, followed by MLB opening day, the World Cup, and NFL wild card weekend. We've had some love for the World Cup on the show here today.
World Cup is awesome. I mean, again, World Cup is, it's kind of like, you know, college basketball. Everybody all of a sudden watches March Madness. I mean, I don't miss World Cup games, you know?
Yeah.
I miss a lot of soccer games. I don't miss World Cup games. So that is a good point. Real quick on March Madness, by the way, three huge stories this week. Obviously, Belmont, and that's another thing, like Belmont last year winning over Murray State. Incredible game. By the last thing I covered before the pandemic hit, and it, you know, it was a huge championship for them. Rick Byrd was on hand. That was March Madness too. And so these conference tournaments are a part of what it is. So Belmont Wednesday, Lipscomb in the three seed in the A-Sun starts with Florida Gulf Coast this week on Thursday, and then the Lady Vols late Friday game as the three seed, and that's the highest seed they've been in 6 years. And I think that team, you know, the men's team is a real question mark right now. I think Tennessee women's basketball actually has a chance to really do something this March.
They certainly look like they're in a much better position right now than the men's team. I would make that bet at the moment.
No doubt. Oh, yeah. And, you know, they're probably going to play – we'll probably play Texas A&M in the semis. Very, very tough game. But you're talking about a one-seed caliber team there along with South Carolina. So I think the Vols are going to be a three in the NCAA tournament, and, you know, that could lead to a run.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow to discuss the latest on the Nashville Predators. The Tennessee Titans look ahead to the game tomorrow for the Preds against the Hurricanes as well. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. Make sure you keep it locked all day here long here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.